Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 131, University of Alabama Crimson Tide football preview, recorded Sunday, August 24th, 2014. Tonight, the roundtable finishes off the SEC West with the Crimson Tide. Join Shane Bailey and Britton Burton as they take a look at Nick Saban's quest for another national championship. They discuss the quarterback situation and wonder if Saban can take a page out of Spurrier's book. What will Kirby Smart's defense look like this year? They discuss the running back situation and much more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Getting towards the end of this SEC preview gauntlet that we've kind of ran over the last 3 weeks here or so, we've got four more programs left. Hopefully you're going to get one basically for the next 4 days or five, I guess, since we had to redo the LSU podcast for those that were able to catch the first version of that. We redid that. Audio's much better this time. So, sorry, Britton, you couldn't make that one yesterday, but we've got Stephen Baker on for Man the Valley Shook to help redo that one with us. So it was another good LSU insight side from that. And Britton Burton is my guest, since I kind of gave that away. Welcome, Britton.
Hey, good to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here because we are going to talk about your team today.
I finally get to talk about the team I really know a lot about.
I think, you know, when I get hosts like you and Nick that are on quite a bit, I've just got to wait to the end to get to Alabama. That way I know you're going to talk at least, you know, beforehand. No, it is Alabama. So we've got Alabama, South Carolina, Kentucky, and Tennessee left. I've got a feeling the Kentucky and Tennessee ones can be pretty quick and easy. They're going to be painful to have to hear, just like the Arkansas folks and the A&M folks, I'm afraid. But, you know, it is what it is. That's why we play the football. It's going to be better football for those two programs. But, you know, we do this as the season progresses every week. So every week you're going to have a new podcast, and we kind of look at the week that just happened, talk about what we were excited about or what we couldn't believe. And then we also kind of get a glimpse into what's going to happen next week and then even further into the future. I know yesterday we had a nice discussion with Stephen about the national championship. It's never too early to talk about that. And he's more optimistic than I am, the fact that there's going to be an SEC team in the national championship games. The way this is going to shake out, there's lots to be played on the field, but there's a real possibility in my head that the SEC could be on the outside looking in, especially if some of the madness that we've talked about on some of these podcasts occur. The West with Mississippi State and Ole Miss, I mean, is a precursor to talking about Alabama. You know, they're much improved. You've got A&M who, you know, if you listen to the A&M fans, aren't going to miss a beat. I don't know if they're going to do that, but they're going to be okay. And then you're going to have Alabama and LSU. So you got 4.5 teams, we'll say. Oh, and Auburn. I didn't even say it. So that's 5.5 teams. And that leaves Arkansas in the basement. So in the West, there are going to be good quality programs. Four of them that could beat you any week. There's a real good chance that some of those teams are going to end up with two losses. You look at the east side of the thing, the board, you're going to have Georgia. You're going to have South Carolina, who we're going to talk about on tomorrow. It'll be up on tomorrow. So you've got Georgia, South Carolina. Florida is supposed to be much improved. You've got three teams, and Missouri is supposed to be pretty good. So you got four teams again in the east. So there's a really, really good chance that you're going to have teams with two losses and more in the West than the East. But that just – unless Georgia runs a table and makes it to the SEC championship and wins that by beating LSU, Alabama, or I don't know if the other teams can make that, Alabama or LSU, I could see them being a one-loss team going forward. But if it's somebody from the West, I think there's a really good chance that two losses are going to be coming in from the West. That was our discussion. He was more optimistic than I am that even if a two-loss team happens, there's a good chance that they're going to the national championship.
And I kind of agree with you, Shane. I think that there's a really good chance that the team coming out of the West has two losses. Really, I think there's a really good chance that the team coming out of the East has two losses as well, which obviously means you'd have a two-loss SEC champion. And is that good enough? And really what it depends on is how many other undefeated teams there are from other conferences. I think if there are three, maybe there's only one other undefeated team and three one-loss teams from the Big Ten, the Big 12, so on, maybe a two-team SEC team has a much better chance of getting in over several one-loss teams. But if there are two or three undefeated teams and two or three other one-loss teams from the lesser conferences, I don't know if a two-loss SEC champion gets in. And the conference is just so tough. You're seeing it get deeper and deeper. The teams like the Mississippis who are way up this year, them being strong, just makes it so much tougher. And it's going to be really, really hard, especially with the questions that so many teams have at quarterback, for anyone to get through that unscathed or even with just one loss. There's just not a truly dominant team this year, but there's a lot of really, really good teams. So it would be a major bummer if this first year of the playoff there wasn't an SEC team, but I think that is entirely possible.
Yeah, and you look, I mean, we're going to get into the schedule for Alabama, but, one of their losses could be late, or two of them, really, if it were to happen. I mean, they got LSU and Auburn both in November. That's not when you want to lose. If you have to have a loss, you want it earlier in the season so you have time to climb back up into polls. They're not using polls, they say, but they're going to look at them. It's going to have a lot of weight because you lost late in the season. You're supposed to be better at the end of the season than at the beginning. So they are going to be penalized whether they're looking at a poll or they're not. So you're looking at teams in the West that are going to have a loss late. That's really going to impact them. You made a great point, and that's the point I have, is that what happens when you've got the Pac-12? That's our saving grace, is that there's a really good chance that if you look at the Pac-12, there might be another two-loss program to win the Pac-12, because it's a really tough conference this year. And that's sad for them, because they, in my opinion, they probably deserve – looking at it at day one, things might change once football starts, but looking at it day one, a two-loss Pac-12 and a two-loss SEC team probably deserves to be in there more than a one-loss Big Ten, Big 12, unless it's Florida State ACC team. So, that's the thing. But if it does get down to that, I could see those other three conferences with one losses getting in, and it's down to the Pac-12 and the SEC each with two losses. If that happens, then the SEC, I think, gets the pass this year. That's still a big what if. Now you're hoping that happens. But that's the fun thing we've got. I mean, we still have a lot of football left to play to make those things pan out. But when you look at it at the beginning of the season, it's just like it's scary to sit there and think that after that huge run we had going to the BCS championship game and winning all but, what, two? The first – or all but one. One or two BCS championship games.
Oh, that SEC teams played in, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't get what you were saying. Yeah, I think all but one, just that last one. Every other time the SEC won it, if they were in it.
I couldn't remember for Ohio State when they won their national championship, if that was a BCS game or not.
No, because that Arkansas team, when Terrell Pryor and those other Ohio State players were suspended for Tattoo Gate, that was the only SEC team to ever lose to Ohio State in the BCS era in that Sugar Bowl from a few years ago.
Okay. Well, that answered my question. I was thinking back to Eddie George in the late 90s.
Well, yeah, George was probably before the BCS era.
That was the last national championship they had, I think, was it not?
Because they beat Miami. I remember that controversial pass interference call. Maurice Claret was their stud tailback before all that drama happened. That's the most recent one, I believe.
But that's still pre-BCS as well, I think, is it not?
I'm pretty sure that was BCS.
Okay. So all but two then. Because
Willis McGahee was on that team too. Remember, he had that horrific knee injury, so that's got to be like 04. Somewhere in there.
Yeah. Okay. So very few times we'd have to look it up, and someone can correct us and let us exactly know, because they have the convenience of being able to not have to pull that out of their brain at the spot, at the drop of a hat when it just enters your head. But very few times has the SEC not been represented in the BCS championship. And so it's going to be different looking at that. So let's switch gears a little bit. I know the reason we're here is to talk about Alabama, and we precursored that with this national championship talk. What's their chances? Do you think they're the leader in the pack going to start the season in the West?
Well, certainly they have more of the media vote to at least come out of the West than anyone else, even than Auburn, although Auburn's a close second when it comes to that. I think that, you know, it's hard not to put a check mark in their box. Obviously, there are questions at quarterback. That's the number one question that everyone has. But when you the track record that Saban has, the track record that they have with having a new quarterback in there, even when they're not 100% sure who that guy's going to be, the recruiting that they've done, the defense that should be back to Alabama standards this year, not that they were bad last year, they just weren't quite what Alabama fans have come to expect. I don't think it's unreasonable to predict them as one of those four in that college football playoff, but there are definite issues and there are going to be definite challenges. That's why I have difficulty predicting whether or not any SEC team is going to make it, because Alabama has as good a chance as any, but there's a real good chance they don't make it too. It's just going to be a really tough year. But there are obviously lots of positives for Alabama all over the field, and we'll get into all that, I'm sure. But there are enough question marks that you can't just say, well, yeah, they're definitely going to, you know, waltz into the SEC championship and then take it on into the Final Four.
All right, so we know you had a number of losses, just like when we talked about the LSU podcast and the first time we recorded it, you were here. I mean, Alabama's been similar to that. I was amazed at the gap. I saw some statistics, and I'm trying to remember them. In the last 2 years, LSU had 21 players go to the draft. The next closest team was Alabama with 10. I wouldn't have thought there was such a disparity in gap, but over the last few years, Alabama and LSU both are it's a machine as far as getting folks to the NFL. What position are you most excited about?
So I am actually most excited about the defensive line, which may sound weird if you're not a close follower of Alabama football, because the past 2 years, and especially last year, the defensive line, and you can include some of those outside linebackers that do a lot of the pass rushing in the Alabama defense, just wasn't very productive. Especially last year, that pass rush was non-existent, and I believe really that was almost as much or more to blame for the poor secondary play that Alabama struggled through. They were having to cover for a lot longer than any good defense should have to cover. I think that's going to be a lot different this year. A lot of the guys who were mainstays on the defense and had been for several years, Ed Stinson, Jeff Pagan, Adrian Hubbard, are gone. And they were guys who Saban trusted and played because they knew what they were doing, but they really never flashed or made huge plays. A lot of times, in the case of an Adrian Hubbard, they didn't even do what they were supposed to be doing all that well, whether it's keeping contain on a run play or whatever. I think they've got a lot of guys who were true freshmen that contributed last year, some junior college guys that have come in and have been dominant through spring ball and fall camp. Everyone close to the program is saying that this is the deepest and most baddest group of defensive linemen that Saban has had. So I think you're going to see – I mean, they made a concerted effort starting 2 years ago to get a little quicker, a little more athletic along the front, because – you know, they saw the change coming. The SEC was a little slower to get to the spread speedball football that everyone's playing now with all the hurry up, but it's here in the SEC now too, and having a bunch of 300-pound pluggers that could stonewall a power run game, you know, that works a couple of times a year against the LSUs of the world, but so many of the other teams are running this wide-open, quick offense. And they made a concerted effort 2 years ago with recruiting to get faster there. and they absolutely knocked it out of the park in the last two recruiting classes, especially this current one with true freshmen that are going to be on the field some now. And I think they can go about 10 deep there, rotate guys in and out, and they're going to be able to get pressure with the front four, which is going to make everything else look that much better. So that's probably what, if you've been paying attention since spring, what you're most excited about. From the personnel standpoint, and how much that's going to impact the defense and make it be kind of that defense that Alabama people have grown accustomed to seeing, which is just a really dominant unit.
I'm looking at, I was pulling something up real quick while you said that. It made me curious. I'm looking up the depth chart, and you're looking at the projected starters. There's two defensive guys on Alabama that's a sophomore, no freshman, all juniors and seniors after that. You compare that to last night when we did the LSU, you've got four sophomores from LSU. That's a big difference when you start looking at the depth of a program. And then when you go too deep, and you probably have those numbers, it's even greater, I bet, on what you're bringing as far as returning players this year compared to last year.
Yeah, that's part of what makes me a little bit nervous about LSU is we know they have talent, but I think they're relying a lot on guys who are young and either haven't played a whole lot yet, or if they do have experience in a certain position, they're backing it up with a lot of lack of experience. And Alabama's not completely different from that. I mean, any team that recruits the way they do and sends so many juniors to the NFL, like both Alabama and LSU do, you're going to have some of that. But I think Alabama is a little better positioned to put guys out there who have played a little bit. Now, they're still going to be very dependent on sophomores and below, but a lot of that is due to the fact that these guys were studs and they were backups last year who really did more of the pass rush duties because the upperclassmen last year couldn't get it done. But I think that you're going to see those guys really take off this year. And then there's so many of them that they can sustain injuries. They can deal with, getting tired throughout the game because they can rotate guys in and there's not going to be a big drop off.
Yeah. Looking at the two deep in LSU, there's nine sophomores and three freshmen. So 12 of the 22 players you're looking at are freshmen or sophomores. If you compare that to Alabama, six sophomores and three freshmen.
Yeah, and I think where that shows up the most is going to be in the secondary. Last year, as everyone knows, there were a lot of new faces in the secondary. Really the only proven guy last year was Deion Ballou, and he played most of the year injured and wasn't as effective as he could have been. There were several guys who were getting on the field for the very first time last year, and they kind of took their lumps. Cyrus Jones, chief among them, a guy who had switched from receiver to defensive back, was only a sophomore. And you expect these guys to come in and be world beaters right away, but they've got to learn some things. They've got to get some experience. And everything that you hear out of camp is that he and Bradley Silve and Geno Smith and some of the other guys that are there have learned some things and have gotten better. And then they also have two five-star top 10 in the country recruits at corner in Marlon Humphrey and Tony Brown that are not expected to start, but will certainly be on the field and push those guys for playing time. But you're going to see where they were so young and so inexperienced last year, that's all going to pay off this year because those guys should know what's going on. And not to mention the fact they'll have a much better pass rush. They're only going to be covering for a couple of seconds instead of five or six, which is, seemed like it was every single play last year.
Yeah, and I will make this note. When I'm looking at this two deep, it's listing punters and kickers as well, and you have a freshman and sophomore, both punter and kicker. So you got two less in that. So and theirs is a junior. So when you look at the 11, it's even stronger for Alabama as far as what you're returning and the depth you're providing on the defensive side of the ball. So that's got to be exciting. What do you think about the offense? I know we still, as of today, do not have a quarterback named, correct?
Correct. It's pretty much known at this point that they're going to split reps in the West Virginia game, and they're going to take a few more games to kind of figure out who the guy is going to be. So no starter named yet.
And unlike, I keep comparing it to LSU because really that's your competition right now. Mississippi State and Ole Miss can give you a fight, but when you look at it, that's your competition, wouldn't you say? I mean, I'm not off base there. So
not totally off base, although Auburn's going to have a lot to say about the West too.
Well, that's true too. I just don't like thinking about them. Sorry. I know you don't either.
No, you don't have to apologize to me.
But unlike LSU, who starts off with Wisconsin, they get a tough match right up front. You get West Virginia, who is improved, but that should be a pretty good game for you guys to win. Then you got Florida Atlantic and Southern Miss. So I see your schedule at the front end being easier to be able to do that and have that flexibility where they're starting off with a really tough matchup, I think, with Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I was going to get into that when we get into the schedule a little bit, but I'm really glad that they're playing West Virginia in game one. It's still enough of a name opponent that you have the players' attention over summer workouts and fall camp and everything, and you're not going to be ridiculed by talking heads for playing a powder puff team. But there's West Virginia, just their makeup is really not going to be enough to threaten Alabama. And it's kind of the perfect way to break them in. Saban has said in the past that he intentionally schedules these opponents, like the Clemsons from a few years ago, the Virginia Techs, the Michigans, and the West Virginias this year, so that his players don't just kind of cruise through the offseason and think, hey, we're opening with Florida Atlantic. We don't have to start work until the season gets here. He really thinks that gives them some juice in the offseason. So you've got that, but then you still got a team who I don't think can really play with them. So even if they don't have things settled at quarterback, they can go in there, play very conservatively, maybe try some things they wouldn't normally try in the passing game, play good defense, and come out with a win. And it's really that way for the first three games of the year.
Well, and to add the extra excitement to this game is that it's on a neutral site in Atlanta. So you have that hype being able to get you focused for the game as well. So that helps as well, even though it's a lesser program, many would think. Yeah. Unless you're a West Virginia fan, of course.
Right.
So on the offensive side of the ball, we still don't know about quarterback. It's going to be two or three games. You're going to do quarterback by committee. Do you think Saban's going to, if one really starts to rise above the other once the game situation start, that he's going to quickly abandon that program? Or is he going to stick with that for a couple games to truly give each of them an opportunity to compete?
Yeah, that's really the million-dollar question. If you look at Saban and Alabama's history, I mean, this exact same thing happened 3 years ago when A.J. McCarron was an unknown commodity. He and Phillip Sims were fighting for the job. They both played split snaps basically in the season opener, which was against like a Kent State or somebody. It wasn't a big opponent. And then they had Penn State in game two. I believe it was in Happy Valley that year.
I'm pretty sure.
Yes. So same deal. McCarron and Sims split snaps in the first, I want to say, four series. And then McCarron goes back in for that fifth and sixth series. The deal was to rotate every two series. And McCarron just was clearly kind of making plays that Sims wasn't. And from then on out, it was McCarron. And then sort of the rest is history. Everyone knows what else happened with the history of McCarron at the quarterback position. So you kind of have that to go on. If he sees in a game situation that one of them is separating and making the plays, and as much as it gets overblown with Alabama quarterbacks, it's as much about managing the game, not necessarily making the huge plays, but knowing when to check into a run or when to, throw the safe check down to a running back for a 2 yard gain that can turn into an 8 yard gain instead of just chucking it deep. I think that he'll make the move pretty quickly once he sees that, but he said in preseason that he's still waiting for a guy to take the bull by the horns and really take the lead, which, that makes you a little bit nervous as an Alabama fan, but everything you're reading is telling you that it's not that they're either or both of them are playing terribly. It's they're both playing at a fairly high level, and they feel good about being able to win with either of them. It's just that neither one has really, really separated from the other. So it'll be very interesting. It's really hard to know until we see it on the field.
Now, help us out. What style do each of those have? Do they bring a different style of quarterbacking when they're back there? I mean, you look at them, there's a big height advantage for Coker. You know, is he going to be more of that drop back pocket passer? Is Sims going to be more mobile? Is there that to play with that you have like South Carolina last year with Dylan Thompson and Connor Shaw, where each quarterback had a different way of playing when they were on the field? And so when Steve Spurrier used the line that he was going to do two quarterbacks last year with South Carolina, it wasn't a big deal because they were completely different in the way they approached the ball and the way they were going to manage the game.
Yeah, they definitely have different skill sets, and this is why ultimately I feel like Coker will probably wind up winning the job, whether it's four games into the season or, you know, one half into the season. He is definitely the traditional drop back, big armed quarterback that Saban likes in pro style offense. Now, he is an underrated athlete. They say that he can move pretty well. It's not like he's much more athletic than AJ McCarron was from the reports that you see.
Let's face it. Today's quarterback has to be somewhat mobile. I mean, you just can't have him sitting back there, three step, five step drop, and expect him not to move. So there has to be some mobility built into it. But that becomes second nature versus that's one of their go to things.
Yeah, very true. Zach Mettenberger is one of the only ones I can remember in the past 4 or 5 years that was. Well, I guess McCarron was somewhat like that too, but really just not a great athlete at all, very immobile and still high successful. So you're right, and Coker has some of that escapability, not going to be a primary runner. Blake Sims is definitely more, you know, he would be perfectly suited for the Auburn offense or for the Oregon offense, and you've seen it when he comes in as a backup, you know, mop-up duty in the past 2 years. The offense for Alabama kind of completely changes. They go to this read option stuff, and he's, of course, they're usually ahead by 30 when he's in, so they're not going to be throwing the ball, but they're pounding the ball with read option, and he's pulling it and keeping it himself a lot. And that's just not really the DNA of Saban and his team and his coaching style. So I don't know. If he's the better quarterback, he will ultimately be the starter, but it's just kind of hard for me to envision Saban being comfortable enough with that, because we don't know that Sims can beat you from the pocket.
Do we think that Saban can take a page out of Spurrier's book, and we'll use the Dylan Thompson, Connor Shaw scenario and place it here? Connor Shaw was that same type of quarterback that you're talking about that Sims is, and that's not what Spurrier is. That's not the type of quarterback. I mean, he wants Dylan Thompson. I think if you could have an honest conversation before the year started, what quarterback style do you want and who do you want to take the reins and win this starting position last year, it would have been Dylan Thompson the way he did the ball. But Connor Shaw clearly was the better quarterback last year, and so Spurrier adapted the way he called plays and ran the offense to adapt to what Connor Shaw can do to make him successful as well as making the team successful. Do you think that that's something that Saban's going to be able to do and take a page out of Spurrier's book? I know that he would hate to have to do that to be compared to Spurrier in that way, but that's a great analogy for me.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison. And I think the answer is we don't know, because since Saban has been at Alabama, they've had the exact same type of quarterback there. AJ McCarron was probably the most physically talented out of all of the guys, John Parker Wilson and Greg McElroy being the other two. But they've really been the same kind of guy. Intelligent, don't turn the ball over, not a huge arm. The other two have already flamed out in the NFL. McCarron's looking like he may not even make the Bengals roster. So they're not hugely overly talented guys, certainly not superior athletes who are going to be running all over the place, but they know the offense. They make the right plays. Blake Sims,
so
we don't know.
Why draft Sims then if that doesn't fit your style?
Well, if he's gives you a better chance to win and he's making the plays, then you do it. I mean, but like I said, I don't know if we know that answer, because Saban's never really been faced with that question. He's always kind of had the same type of quarterback to choose from, and he just chose the best one. I think there's no question that Coker has the best physical gifts. But, you know, he's been there for like 4 months. He's been on campus for 3 or 4 months, whereas Blake Sims has been there for 5 years. And there's only so much you can do to get that chemistry down, timing, and learn the playbook, learn the guys, be a leader in the huddle. It's just going to take time for that to happen. And there's probably also a factor of, you know, Saban understands that Sims has been there. He's worked hard alongside the other guys who are on that roster. And they're, you know, you don't want to cause any kind of inner turmoil by naming a guy a starter who just got here and maybe turning some players against each other or against the coaching staff. I mean, there's probably some political aspect of who to name that they have to be aware of. And so I don't know. I think ultimately the guy who gives them the best chance to win will be named the starter. I just think we as outsiders have no clue who that is right now. And I don't even know if the insiders really know who that is right now either.
So that you bring up a very interesting point. So this could all be the politics of and the mind of Nick Saban to give Sims the opportunity to lead at the beginning and then transition to Coker over these three games because he is the better talent. He is what he wants in a system-type quarterback, and that gives him the opportunity to prove himself on the field, have the rest of the team be able to rally behind this choice as a leader. Whereas, like you said, these guys have played with Sims for – Sims is a – is he a red shirt or a five-year, fifth-year
senior? Yeah, he's a red shirt senior.
So you're right. He as far as being with the program, that does buy a lot. And, you know, the one thing that you get with Alabama is loyalty. So that is a funny thing that you bring up. It's a good point. I will compare also – we'll make the transition off of quarterback to the running back – in some instances, you're a little bit like LSU in that you have a running game that's going to be so solid as well to help take some of that pressure off of the quarterbacks to have to perform at the beginning at least, especially the way your season sets up with these first three games. You give them the ability to – those quarterbacks the ability to set in there, become comfortable, get used to the game time situations and not just play mop-up duty where it can really matter. And you still have Yeldon and Henry and Drake to be back there to be able to run the ball and pound it and control the line of scrimmage that way.
Yeah, that's where obviously at tailback they're just loaded, and it's an embarrassment of riches back there. You know, Yeldon is kind of the underappreciated man for someone who's gone over 1,000 yards two consecutive years is very likely to break the all-time Alabama rushing record this year, held by Sean Alexander. He kind of gets overlooked, and part of it is that he ended the year with a little bit of a thud last year because of some ankle injuries and wasn't quite physically 100%. And then there was also the sort of savant-like performance by Derrick Henry in the Sugar Bowl where we saw this guy who had 12 touches, I think, in the Sugar Bowl for like 180 yards and two touchdowns, and everybody was like, where was that? Is that what we're supposed to expect next year? And you hear all sorts of preseason reports about how Kenyon Drake is just unstoppable. And so you kind of forget about Yeldon. You know, Gurley and some of the other guys get all the headlines, but Yeldon's going to be right there as an all-SEC candidate. He's very durable. And then, you know, if he's not playing well for whatever reason, then you've got three other guys who would start for just about every team in the country. There's talent everywhere. I think probably people are as much or more excited about the contributions Kenyon Drake can make as anyone, because what we're hearing is that they're going to get him involved not just by handing him the ball and having him run between the tackles, but they're going to get him involved in the passing game. They're going to motion him out, get him isolated on linebackers with crossing routes, and they're going to get him the ball in space, and that's exactly what that guy needs. That's a guy who, if he had gone to Oregon, you know, or somewhere like that, would be a Heisman contender, because he just has that breakaway speed that you don't really usually associate with the Alabama running backs. And then there's Derrick Henry, who is the quintessential Alabama running back, who can just – is just huge and just a man child. He's, you know, 6'3", 240, 250, bigger than most of the linebackers who are hitting him. And if he gets that head of steam going, he's real tough to bring down. And then there's tons of depth after them too. I mean, those are the three headliners, but there's still three other guys, Jocelyn Fowler, Tyron Jones, Alti Tenpenny, they can come in and play ball if they need to. So it's you're definitely excited about the running game, and you hope they can lean on it.
All right. Aside from the quarterback position, what are you most worried about?
So actually, I am more concerned about this than the quarterback position. The offensive line is a serious question mark in a couple of spots, and that's the one thing that really makes me reserve putting Alabama in that four-team playoff, because they need to be able to lean on the run game, and no matter how good those tailbacks are, they're getting hit as soon as they receive the handoff. They're not going to go anywhere. We know all about that with Chris Johnson here living in Nashville for the Tennessee Titans. They're going to be starting a true freshman left tackle. He was a five-star recruit. He was a top 10 guy, nationally widely accepted as the best tackle in this class, but he's a true freshman, an 18-year-old kid coming into the SEC. So there's going to be, as good as he will probably be physically, he's supposedly doing just fine, but there's going to be mental busts there. Every now and then he's going to get overmatched against a guy who's 22 years old and just has more, you know, grown man strength. So there's concerns there. The right guard position has not really solidified, mostly because two JUCO offensive linemen who were probably going to have the best chance of starting there missed a lot of fall camp with injuries. So you've got a sophomore in there who hasn't really played yet, and Alphonse Taylor. I think Saban wants a little more physicality out of those guard spots. And then Ari Quanjo, who actually started last year but was really disappointing in a lot of ways last year, is still a starter this year, but I don't know how much confidence there is there. I think he's another guy who may have been beaten out for a starting spot by one of these JUCO guys that came in if they had been healthy in camp. The only spots you really, really feel good about are center and right tackle. Those two guys have played, have been through the wars. You trust them. But I think there is a possibility that there's going to be problems there. And we know we talked about this last year when McCarron and so much of that skill was coming back. Alabama, your team is what it is. You have a certain DNA. You know, Oregon is this up-tempo, crazy spread offense. Alabama is power football, run the football, and get your passing yardage off of play action and people being so afraid of the run that they leave the pass open. And when they tried to be a little bit more of an open offense, sometimes it didn't look real good last year. And so I think there are concerns that they're not going to be able to impose their will and run the ball when everyone knows they're going to run the ball. That's how they were so good in 2012. That offensive line could mash for 5 yards when you knew it was coming and you had 10 guys in the box. I think there's legitimate concerns that that's not going to be the case this year, at least all the time, against some of the better opponents. And do you have the quarterback who can pick it up and make things happen when the running game isn't working? And I think that we don't really know that 100% right now, so we're going to find that out, and that's another reason why I'm glad for sort of the soft start. It gives the offensive line a chance to gain some confidence, push around some weaker opponents, and hopefully get that quarterback and the passing game going. But there are legitimate concerns with the O-line, and I'm actually more concerned, especially based on training camp reports, that the O-line is going to be more of a problem than the quarterback.
The good news is that you've got a quarterback that should be capable, no matter what happens, to get you through the first three games, to get you understood where you need to be. You got an offensive line that might not give them the time. Are you worried about the gaps that's not going to create then? I mean, that's one thing that you think about Alabama, is just the gaping holes that they're able to provide, that the running back tandems that you always have.
Yeah, that's more what I'm concerned about, is just not being able to power over people with the run game. I think that pass pro has actually been okay from reports in camp. I'm more concerned about them just being able to come out and mash you with the run. And, you know, we won't know until we see it. Because if you can do that, you can establish that line of scrimmage, you get opponents fearing the run, just it's ridiculous, the talent out wide and at tight end that's going to be on the field. You're going to be able to make people pay all day with that talent. But I think Alabama is what Alabama is. They've got to be able to lean on that run game, establish a run, especially until they break these quarterbacks in and figure out who the quarterback, not quarterbacks, you know, singular, is going to be. And I'm not 100% confident that they're going to be able to do that, especially early in the year.
All right, well, let's look at what they have at the beginning of the year. We mentioned that they start the season off with West Virginia. How do you think that game's going to play out in Atlanta?
I think it's going to be, like I said earlier, I'm glad that this is who we're playing because of the name opponent, the excitement it generates, but the fact that it's West Virginia is, it's not the West Virginia from a couple of years ago. They're still just as bad on defense as they have been. But what you've always said, well, okay, but they can score 80 points every game. Well, last year they only scored over 40 points four times, and three of those were in losses where they gave up at least 47 points, and one of those being 70 points they gave up to Baylor. The other game they scored over 40 in was against Georgia, either Georgia Southern or Georgia State. Other than that, they were scoring in the 20s, sometimes in the teens, and they bring the same quarterback back. I believe they're pretty excited about their tailbacks, but it's just not the same team that you think of West Virginia, you know, from 2 to 4 and 5 years ago. So I just don't think they're going to – I'm excited that they're going to be bringing the tempo spread offense because I love seeing Alabama prepare for that and using that to prepare for some of the other teams on the SEC slate. But I just don't think – even with the question marks on the offensive line for Alabama, I don't think they're going to be able to withstand the physical pounding because they're just not built for it. They're built to defend the Big 12 teams, and they're small up front, and I think they're going to get run all over, and I think they're going to have a hard time scoring on a defense that is going to be well-equipped to defend offenses like this year.
So you're going to give them the win, is what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty easily.
All right, so you're thinking more than 2 touchdowns when you say pretty easily?
I think if the spread were at – if the line were at like 16.5, that's where I'd have trouble deciding where to put my money. But I think 14 or 13.5, I'd be willing to bet the over pretty easily there.
Okay. I don't think there's any reason to talk about the next two games. September 6th and 13th, you host Florida Atlantic and Southern Miss.
Agree.
So we'll go on to the next game. I mean, you stay south. I know it's not a home game at West Virginia, but you stay south, and then you get the next three at home, including September 20th. When you have the Florida Gators come to town. I still don't know what to think about that program.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I don't know what to think about Florida. I don't know what to think. My gut tells me that Jeff Driskel just isn't a real good quarterback, and I don't know if this new offensive coordinator is going to make a difference. Their defense should be very good, so this is a game that it scares me a little bit because of the offensive line and quarterback situations. Florida is going to be able to handle the run game to an extent. This is the first game of the season where Alabama's not going to be able to come out, hand it off on simple up the middle run plays and get 5 yards every time. Florida can man up and stop that. So this is really going to be the game where we find out, do you have a quarterback on the roster who is capable of making the plays that it takes to win big games. I just don't think we're going to need to find that out in West Virginia in the West Virginia game, and obviously the next two we certainly won't. So this is the one, and there is definitely a chance that Florida can win this game if the quarterback can't answer those questions in the affirmative. There's definitely a chance. I'm just not really buying Florida all that much, but it could definitely happen. I would pick Alabama, but if we don't have the quarterback that can make the plays, then this is definitely a lost candidate right here.
Now, if that were to happen, I mean, your national championship season's out the door at that point, don't you think? I mean, it's way early, but if you're sitting there losing to Florida at home, there's lots to be worried about in the state of Alabama, is there not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If they can't win that game, and as I just said, if they can't win that game, I think it's because they don't have a quarterback who can make the plays. Unless there's massive improvement in the next 8 games and one of those quarterbacks can make the plays, then yeah, you're looking at several losses if you lose this game. I don't think this is your only loss if you lose this game. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm giving them – I haven't told you what I thought. I'm giving them a win here. It's going to be a close one. I mean, it might be 3 to 5 points. It's going to be less than a touchdown, I feel. And like I precursored this with, I just don't know what to think about Florida. I mean, I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be better. But, I mean, to hear certain people talk, I mean, they're ready to be right up there with Georgia and South Carolina to compete for the East. And I know they were hurt with injuries. Driscoll going down last year is just one of a dozen or so injuries that they had. It's just hard for me to buy into that fact. Defensively, they're still going to be good. They were pretty decent at times last year, and the year before that, they were unbelievable. So defensively, they're going to give you fits. You know, can they get their offensive together? What is this, the third offensive coordinator in 3 years for Driscoll and the Florida Gators and Muschamp? That's a lot to have to. That's a lot of change management to have to go through on the field, and learn different ways that are.
You must work in IT.
I work somewhere like that, but it is. It's change management right there. I mean, because you've got new playbooks, you've got new ways of calling things, new language, all these different things that go into this new system. I don't know. I could be off base. I just don't think Florida's going to be as good as some of those others do, but I do think they're going to be improved, and I think their defense is what's going to keep them in play. I think this is where your offense is really going to start to get tested, and you're really going to have to, like you said, figure out who that quarterback is. But I think at the end of the day, that's going to be decided, and you're going to be able to press on and go forward with this one. I think your biggest stumbling block, though, is the next week when you go to Ole Miss.
Yeah, so I actually have this one as a loss for Alabama. This is kind of what we talked about with the West being a lot stronger, and with specifically with the two Mississippi schools being much, much closer to the elite level than they usually are. You know, you can always count on two of the three out of Alabama, LSU, and Auburn being really, really strong, and then it's every 3 to 5 years somebody else kind of makes a run. Arkansas under Petrino did that. They did it under Houston Nutt every now and then too. Mississippi State, it's been a while since they've been approaching that level, but they're capable of doing it. Ole Miss, same for them. It's been a while, but they're capable of doing it every now and then. And this year I think you're looking at both Mississippi schools being potential, if everything breaks right, potential 10-win teams. Now, I don't think everything's going to break right, but they're going to be good teams. Ole Miss is one of the few teams coming back that has quarterback play that they trust. Now, you don't always trust Bo Wallace because he tends to throw picks or fumble the ball at some of the most inopportune times, but he also makes a lot of plays for you and he wins games for you. You know, this one's at Ole Miss. I think Alabama's still going to be pretty conservative offensively coming into this game, because even if they have the quarterback situation figured out, and as we've said, they've won the Florida game, so they at least have somebody that can make plays, but I still think they're going to be pretty conservative offensively. And Ole Miss is a team that can put up some points. It's going to be the first really, really good test for the Alabama defense. And I think the defense will do fine. I think the offense will do fine. I just think Ole Miss is a good team this year. With it being at Ole Miss, I think Ole Miss finds a way to win this game.
I'm going to disagree. I think it's going to be another close game with Ole Miss, but I like you, are going to give them some losses, but I'm not giving them one right here. I think it's going to happen a little bit later on down the season here. I think it's going to be tough to go to the Grove and win. I think they're going to come off of Florida realizing what they have to do week after week to compete. That's going to be their wake-up game where they squeak by. So they're not going to get that loss at Ole Miss because of that.
Hope you're right.
I know you do. The next week, I hate doing this about a team like Arkansas in the SEC, but, you know, it's like, all right, that's a win for Alabama.
Yeah, that one's even if the offense is struggling, Arkansas's offense will be struggling more.
Texas A&M at Alabama.
Yeah, so this is one that I don't think is really going to be much of a problem. I think A&M's going to take a pretty big step back this year. They're not going to have the offensive firepower that they've had in the past. Sumlin is a good coach. They'll still score some points this year, but they're not going to be magical like they have been the last 2 years. Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans won a lot of football games for them without both of them, and especially Johnny Manziel. They may not have gone bowling last year with that defense. I don't know how much it improves. Even if it improves some, they're still probably the 70th ranked defense, and that's just not good enough. It's in Tuscaloosa. I think the defense is going to finally kind of exact some revenge on Texas A&M after just being sliced and diced 2 years in a row by Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans specifically. And this is probably a 2-touchdown or more game.
I'm not buying stock in A&M this year. I do, unlike you guys, I still think their defense is going to be just head and shoulders better than what they were last year. I don't have any proof of that. I still think that defensively they're going to be better. Offensively is where they're going to struggle. Like you guys, that's a big loss with Manziel and Evans. But I think Evans was in some ways a bigger loss. And nobody, you know, one guy was telling me that, well, he had just those three catches. That's not a season. I don't have time to look up the numbers. I would love to see the third downs where he caught a pass and was able to get a first down. It didn't have to be a great catch where it was a SportsCenter top 10 catch. He made some tremendous catches week after week, third down that saved Manziel's butt. And so I give him more credit than I am Manziel. And that's me. I'm on an island by myself, I think. But all that being said, neither one of them are there, so it doesn't matter. I think their offense is going to have to worry about what to do next, and I just don't see them being able to recover, especially at Alabama. Alabama also has some revenge in them. I mean, they don't like to see any team make them look bad. And so the last couple of years, A&M's given you guys fits. It's a great way to put them back in their place, so to speak. It's not, you know, Saban's not one to run the score up on you, but he is one to let you not forget, you know, who's the boss. Next you have at Tennessee. Like South Carolina last year, nobody is going to sneak up on Tennessee. You know, you can look at their schedule. They're going to be improved, but they've got a completely new offense. We say that this is a broken record. They've got a whole new offensive line, whole new defensive line. Lots to worry about as far as what to look at there. Their record might not be any better. They're going to be a better team. But nobody's going to be able to – or Tennessee's not going to be able to sneak up on anybody this year.
Yeah, if you've listened to any of the podcasts where we've previewed a Tennessee game, you know, as Tennessee is one of the opponents for the team we were previewing, or if you've just been paying attention at all, you know that they're replacing all five starters on the offensive line, all four starters on the defensive line. They still don't have great quarterback play. You don't beat a team like Alabama when you're brand new at every single spot along the line of scrimmage. Even though there are concerns with the Alabama offensive line, there are no concerns with the Alabama defensive line, and you're not going to beat a lot of these tough SEC teams. You know, Georgia, South Carolina, you're not going to beat a lot of these teams with that much trouble along the lines of scrimmage. And it's going to be another long Saturday for Tennessee fans in an Alabama game, unfortunately for them, but happily for us.
Then you go to Death Valley on November 8th. You both come off of a bye week there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I believe that's how it worked out last year. Both teams kind of realized that they want that bye week, I guess, before they play each other. This is where I've actually changed my tune a little bit, Shane, because I feel like Alabama is a two-loss team. The problem is their schedule kind of breaks in a way that it's a little bit hard to pick what that second loss will be. But I think this is the best candidate. It's CBS has the option here for the two broadcasts on a Saturday, so this is going to be a primetime game. It's going to be at night in Death Valley. I think LSU has a lot of question marks. We've talked about their depth issues. This is one that, you know, 6 weeks into the season, I could completely change my prediction if they have a couple of key injuries, because they're going to be starting a lot of young guys on both sides of the ball. They also have the quarterback quandary to deal with. But I just, Alabama just is not at the elite level that they have been in the last couple of years, and I feel like this is a two-loss team. And so this, to me, is the most logical place because it's going to be a tough, tough environment. And we all know that when Saban goes back to Baton Rouge, they want blood. They're in it for the kill, and they're looking for some revenge. I mean, people, you know, LSU doesn't lose to too many programs twice in a row. And Alabama has definitely gotten the upper hand in this rivalry the past 5 years or so, and maybe not quite that far back, maybe 3 or 4 years. So they're going to be certainly motivated. Alabama, is their primary motivation this entire season is Auburn. I don't think you overlook LSU ever, but if you ever were not as motivated to prep for LSU the way that you typically are, this is the season because you're thinking about Auburn so much. So I'm going to go with LSU here.
Yeah, I mean, LSU's going to – I'm going with LSU as well because of some of the things you said. Unlike you, I'm only giving Alabama one loss right now. There's definitely a second loss on this bill. I think their biggest stumbling blocks are Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Auburn for that second loss. But you look at Jennings and the quarterback issues at LSU. I think in a lot of situations, you've got a lot of mirrored images here. You've got an extremely strong run game. You're going to have a really tough defense on LSU side of the ball. It should be a good hard-fought game, and because it's at Death Valley, and that's such a tough place to play, that's the reason I'm giving them the edge. If this was turned and you all were in Tuscaloosa, I'd be going the other way and saying it's Alabama's win. But those 3 points, that home game at LSU, it's such a tough place to play. Such a tough place for anybody to come in there and get the win, no matter how good your program is and how bad LSU is. So when you get both teams expected to be really good, it's hard for me to go against LSU.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I did mention Mississippi State. I know you love Mississippi State. I think you wish they were in the East so you could root for them all the way.
Yeah, they're kind of my second team this year, I guess.
Do you see a win or a loss against those Bulldogs?
Well, so this was an interesting one, and I have spent so much time the last several days debating where my second loss was going to come, because I really think that Mississippi State has a chance to be the second best team in the West this year. I think that they're better than Ole Miss. But I gave the loss to Alabama in the Ole Miss game simply because we're at Oxford and Mississippi State is coming to Tuscaloosa. I really think that Mississippi State matches up better with the defensive starters they're returning. We talked about how Florida is a little bit scary because they're going to have the defense to contain the Alabama run game, and which means the quarterback has to be able to make plays. Well, Mississippi State does too. We've talked at length about 19 of 22 out of the two deep, a very stout defensive line, really good linebacking play. I mean, they're built to beat Alabama, and this is not going to be fun at all. If it were the other way around and we were Ole Miss was coming to Tuscaloosa on October 4th and Alabama was going to Starkville on November 15th, I would be picking Mississippi State, but that's not the case. So I'm going with Alabama, but it's going to be a nail biter, probably a low scoring kind of throwback defensive ball game.
Yeah. I'm looking at this and just looking at the way the schedule breaks. There's going to be a little bit of looking ahead for you guys at this point, because after this, let's face it, Western Carolina's a win. So we're not even going to talk about that game.
Right.
You're going to be coming off of a hard-fought game in Baton Rouge. If there's a trap game on your schedule, even though you're in Tuscaloosa, this could be it. And so if I had to give you a second loss and said Alabama's going to lose two, you might lose back-to-back at LSU and Mississippi State. But I'm giving you the win.
And, well, the other thing is that Mississippi State a lot of times kind of plays the role of that trap game. They're always the week after LSU, and they're always 2 weeks before Auburn with some kind of patty cake opponent in between. So the Alabama's always physically beaten up and kind of emotionally down after an LSU game, whether they've won or lost. And Mississippi State, they have been ugly games. Even in the past 4 years, they've beaten them, gone on to national championships and SEC championships, but they've been ugly games and they've not come out and just dominated the way that you thought they would. And this is a much better Mississippi State team. The other thing is that Alabama has lost a game in November every year starting in 2010. 2009 was the last year they did not lose a game in November. So if they somehow do beat LSU, you know, history tells you that there's a real good chance of losing one of these three games, Auburn, Mississippi State, and LSU. Mississippi State is a great candidate for that.
Yeah. I'm still going to think that you're going to get that win, like you. But if I had to say there's a second loss, that's where it's coming. Western Carolina, we already talked about. Now we're at the Iron Bowl. Sweet revenge is all I can say. It's going to be at Tuscaloosa. You've got this. I said yesterday when we did LSU, Alabama has this not only circled, it's double circled on their calendar right now.
Yeah, absolutely. This is they're not going to lose this game. I think I said it about Georgia too. There's no way in the wide world that they're going to lose this game to Auburn. And that is no disrespect to Auburn, because I think they're going to be a very, very good team this year. Malzahn is definitely a good coach. But if you look back at last year, a lot of things had to go right for Auburn to win that game. Even as poorly as Alabama played, they dropped passes, they missed field goals, they had inopportune penalties that allowed Auburn to stay alive, and then, of course, one of the more improbable plays in the history of college football to actually seal the deal. And Alabama remembers that. You know, everything kind of got derailed for Alabama. The way the season ended, it feels like it was a terrible season, but they were right on track to go in for a third straight national championship until all that happened. And I think there were enough holes and problems with Alabama that it probably would have gotten derailed somewhere else along the way, too. And it's actually been a positive thing, because it's turned this season into sort of a season of redemption, and the guys are more bought into the process, the famous process. But there's no way that they're losing to Auburn. I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout, because Auburn's a good team, but they're going to beat Auburn this year.
So can you say this kind of is reminiscent of, was it the 9-3 season that you came off of the national championship? Was that in 10?
Yeah, that was 10.
So you're thinking maybe it's a little bit like that, where they're coming off of that, ready to go back for another national championship run?
Yeah, I think so. Everything that you read about the team is that there's a lot more sort of commitment to the process and renewal of becoming a team and being more about, you know, doing the little things that it takes to win games. I think that, you know, any team that has as much success as Alabama had is due to get a little bit complacent. And there was a lot of drama with last year's team, drama that you don't typically associate with Nick Saban teams. And there were some guys who were more concerned about going to the NFL and, you know, just kind of the things that can worm their way into your team and can get you beat against good teams. And from all reports coming into this season, that is not the case at all, and the team is ready to rock. Now, I think there are enough questions that they don't just run through the schedule like they have in the past, but they seem to at least be back to being a bought-in Alabama team.
All right, so you've got them with two losses. That's got them ending the regular season at 10-2, going to Atlanta or not going to Atlanta?
I do have them going to Atlanta. I think that even though they have two losses, I think that LSU and Auburn each have three losses, and I think that Mississippi State potentially has only three, but possibly four, and I think that Ole Miss has potentially only three and possibly four. I think there's a real chance that there are five teams with nine or more wins, and even though Alabama loses two, I think they manage to lose one less than everybody else.
All right, I have them going to Atlanta too, but for a different way. I see Auburn with two losses, I think. And one of those losses is going to come from Georgia. So that's going to – so and Alabama's only going to have one loss in my record book. And so for that reason, going to the Iron Bowl, they'll come out a winner there and go to Atlanta. But then again, they're going to get a buzzsaw at Georgia. And I think they lose in Atlanta. That's my gut.
You've got Georgia as the SEC champ, huh?
I do. I don't know why. Just I feel it. And I don't know if I said that on the Georgia podcast or not, but there's just been enough that's gone wrong for the East for so many years. I think it's their year. So we'll see what happens. Well, anything else before we wrap this one up?
I don't think so. I'm just so ready. It's close, man. It's real close.
We're Sunday, so we're 4 days away from real college football. I know the FCS had some games this weekend, possibly. I think I saw on Twitter.
Eastern Washington and somebody was on Saturday. I was watching.
I didn't watch it, but I saw on my Twitter talking about football was starting. So, you know, real football, championship level football, that makes money. It's getting ready to come in 4 days, so we're going to be winding down. Appreciate you listening into the Alabama Preview Podcast. We've got a couple more teams to get you through until kickoff on Thursday. So, guys, find us at SECSRT. Those six letters will find us anywhere you want, whether it's on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, podcast, iTunes, Stitcher. Lots of love to Stitcher here lately. Again, they've just been right on board. As soon as these podcasts are hitting Stitcher, they're letting you guys know via Twitter as well. So we appreciate them giving us some real love and appreciating what we do. If they feel it enough to retreat it to all their listeners that subscribe to Stitcher, I think we're doing something right. So, guys, with that, we're going to wrap this one up and call this podcast done.